Welcome to The Line, the sports podcast from PR Week.
So welcome to the fourth episode of The Line, the PR Week sports podcast. Myself and Danny Rogers here. Hi, Danny.
Morning, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm not too bad. We've got a good one today. We've got Arsenal Fan TV is the subject, and we've got Robbie Lyle, who's the ringmaster, a cast of characters such as Claude, Troops, DT, Mo, and Ty. I love Ty. Ty's my favourite.
Arsenal Fan TV here with Santi Cozzola.
Thanks, Arsenal!
Here with John Lydon.
Here with Danny Welbeck.
I expect you, Wenger, and you, Gazidis, to end your resignation.
And we have Lizzie Pollitt, who is creative director of Cake and, among other things, a Watford obsessive and a health and fitness podcaster and blogger. So we are good to go. Robbie, let's just talk about the last year because it's been pretty extraordinary. Yeah. You are, it feels like, the sort of authentic voice of Arsenal fans. This is what you're doing full time.
Yeah.
At what point did you think, okay, yeah, I'm giving the day job up and this is my full-time gig?
Ooh, I think it was about a year and a half ago. We sort of realised that, you know, it's got so big that I can no longer sneak out of work and tell it, because I used to work as a surveyor, so it used to be quite helpful because I'd be on the road a lot, so I could sneak to certain meetings and certain things. But then I realised that, no, it's too... I need to do it full time to really justify what we're doing, to really give it justice. So yeah, I decided that, you know, I'm going to give up the daytime job and go into it full time.
And what's been the what your favourite bits of the last 6 months to a year?
Oh, it's been so many, you know, because you know, following the team that you love around the world. Because we've been, even recently we was in China, we was in Australia, and that was really great. I think actually we had a little spat with Gary Neville,
yes,
off of Sky, and we got to then have a sit down and sort of thrash out our differences over a video, and that was a really good experience, you know, because you kind of come up and you see these guys playing football. And yeah, I used to hate Gary Neville, actually, played for Man United. But, you know, and
what did he say? What was the start of the row?
Well, how the row started, it was sort of that clash between traditional media and what we're doing. So it was a game where we played Chelsea, and yet again, we've been beaten by Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. And a lot of fans were very upset about it. And I think he came out of the ground at the time, and he'd seen... fans, you know, ranting and having a bit of a go at Arsene Wenger. And he kind of laid into the fans, and he laid into us as well on Arsenal Fan TV. He said, oh, it was embarrassing the way I saw fans carrying on, you know, voicing their opinions about the manager. And so I kind of took a bit of exception to that, because I was like, well, hold on, it's all right for you guys to say whatever you've got to say about Arsenal, but when an ordinary fan comes out and says what he has to say, what is it? Are we not allowed to have our say? Why are we embarrassing? Why are you guys not embarrassing? Why is Paul Mercer not embarrassing them for saying the same sort of things on Sky? And then we sort of went back and forth on Twitter, and it blew into a big storm. And then a few days later, Sky got in contact with me and said, well, listen, would you guys like to sit down and talk about it? I said, yeah, I would.
Right, we've got a clip.
It's on, it's happening. We've got Gary Neville here. And first of all, I've got to say, you know, thanks for, you know, hosting us. Thanks for agreeing to this, because I didn't think you'd agree to it initially. First of all, when you said that Arsenal Fan TV thing, I was like, well, it's a bit like you're kind of looking down on us in a way.
The word thing is probably more, I'm probably more regretful over that than anything else, because to be honest with you, what in terms of the actual... what I saw after the Chelsea game was loads of stewards, hundreds of Chelsea fans, some guy in the middle of it with an Arsenal scarf on abusing Arsene Wenger. A massive commotion. It was provocative, to be honest with you.
What was his general demeanour? How did he come across to you?
He was a very nice guy, unfortunately.
Oh, no, I don't want to hear
you
that.
Know, you carry that hatred of a player. No, he was a great player, of course. No, he was a, you know what, fair play to him. He listened to what we had to say. And I think that, there was an acceptance on his part that, you know, we do represent a modern type of media. And, he didn't agree with everything we said, which I didn't expect him to. But, I thought we came to kind of a good kind of compromise on it. And as I said, it was basically a clash of traditional media, which obviously he's a big part of and a very good part of, and us, who, I think we're a different type of media, because one of the things that we've allowed is that we've allowed an ordinary fan at Arsenal. He doesn't have to have any followers on Twitter. He doesn't have to come from a media background. All he has to be is an Arsenal fan. And if he's an Arsenal fan and he's wants to state his opinion on the team, he can do it on our platform. And that's one of the things we've been very proud of, that, I think we're... Because even before, previously, you've had blogs and stuff like that, and yeah. So they've been a bit clicky, some of them, where, it's only if you're a guy who's got big social media presence or you write for a newspaper or something, you can come on. But we allow anybody, as long as you're an Arsenal fan, and you want to have your say on the team, you can do on our platform.
So, Robbie, you're, in a way, a threat to old media, because you're taking a huge amount of viewers that possibly could watch their programming. Tell us a bit about just how many people view your content each week.
I'd say each, if I'd broken it into each month across all our platforms, I'd say probably about 25 million people across all the platforms we're on would be viewing our stuff. On YouTube every week, probably up towards about 4 to 5 million people watch our content. So,
how has that grown over the last couple of years or so?
Yeah, it's been incredible growth over the past few years. I mean, it was steadily growing anyway. I think this is like our fifth season that we're going into. But, yeah, the last couple of seasons, it has really, really taken off. I think probably in the early days, it was probably just Arsenal fans. Now I'd say, as well as Arsenal fans, there's many fans of other clubs, because a lot of fans I speak to, they're like, do you know what? I see a lot of people on Arsenal Fan TV, and we've got the same type of fan at our club. So I can really relate to that fan. I can, and you guys, the thing that I'm told a lot is that you guys are real. It's you're real fans talking about your club from the heart. It's passionate. And that's why I think a lot of fans of other clubs really, resonate with
it. Yeah. I was going to ask you, actually, have you seen a lot of copycat fan TVs spring up? You're seen as the leader, I believe.
Yeah, it wasn't actually the first one. There was Redmen TV, which is a Liverpool fan channel. They've been going for longer than us. Kind of a different format to us, in that they didn't really used to interview fans outside grounds like what we did. They're more studio-based, but they have been going for longer than us. And there's Man United ones, there's Chelsea ones, West Ham got a very good one. But I think it's a positive thing. I don't look on it negatively. I don't look on it like copycats.
You've got your own audiences, I guess.
Yeah, they got the fans of their clubs, and I think a lot of fan bases are very different. Arsenal fans are pretty unique. A lot of people say we moan a lot. I don't actually think we do moan any more than any other fan. I just think that, because we're there now, Arsenal Fan TV, you get to see us moaning a lot more. But, we don't moan any more than any other fan, in my opinion.
Lizzie, are you Arsenal Fan TV? Has Watford got something similar going on?
We have bits and pieces going on, but perhaps not quite to the scale. There's a brilliant podcast from the Rookery end. But I'm quite envious, actually. I wish there was a bigger platform. And like Danny said, it's not competition, because every club has its own audience, and that's what I like about it. But what you were saying about authenticity, I think, is really interesting, because actually, if you rock up to Watford on a match day, one of the most visible presences there is the 1881, which is the fan-run organisation, which organises everything from those giant banners. You might have seen one on Saturday that we unveiled.
That was a big banner.
It was impressive, wasn't it? But that is all run by fans for fans. And obviously the club's involved to a certain extent, but I think that's what's so unique about something like football, is the passion that people put into it. Just like you said with your job, going off to start Arsenal Fan TV, these people all have full-time jobs, but they spend every spare moment thinking about, right, how can we make this a better club to support? How can we support the supporters even better? I think it's a good thing. But yeah.
What? What's sorry, Danny said crossover. But what's the relationship? Lizzie there mentioned the club and the involvement. What's your relationship with the club like?
I don't think we have a bad relationship with the club. I wouldn't say, I don't know. It's hard to describe. I mean, I've met before with, the director of communications there. I've met before with Ivan Gazidis. I remember two seasons ago I was over in LA and Arsenal was over there on a tour. And we spoke at length, actually. And he said to me, he goes, listen, I like what you guys do. Even though I get a lot of stick on it sometimes, but he goes, I like the fact that, you give fans a chance to have their opinion. And he said to me, he thinks that's a good thing. So I'm not sure they're almost always happy with us after a bad defeat, because we do allow fans to be very open and honest about the performance of the team and players, etc. And probably there's no other club where it's as open as we are. But we don't have a bad relationship with the club. I mean, I, as I've always said to them, all we want is for the club to be successful. That's just us, really. But we want to be able to also be independent, that we give fans a chance to have their opinions.
I want to ask you both about the commercial side of things, because obviously, Robbie, you have now become a media organisation, with that mm-hmm. sort of audience. How do you deal with people who approach you for commercial tie-ups?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that has been one of the things, over the past couple of years that, now a lot of commercial deals do sort of come our way. We kind of vet them. They have to be things that we feel are going to work with us. So at the moment, we've currently got a sponsorship deal for the season with Ladbrokes. The way in which it's been structured sits very well alongside our content. It's just, we get a lot of deals coming our way, but we're kind of like, it has to work with what we're doing. Because, we don't want it to be, it still has to be about the fans as far as we're concerned on the content that we're doing.
And do Ladbrokes, what's the nature of the deal with Ladbrokes? Do they have any say over direction or editorial content?
They have no say whatsoever over our content. They trust us in the type of content that we put out. There are obviously a few terms and conditions to the type of content that comes out, but that's just to be expected, on the abuse and things like that. But basically, they've said to us, listen, we just want to put our brand in to your content. We like what you do. We like your numbers, obviously. And they come up as sponsors of our content. And
A set time period? It's a year or 2 years or something?
We've at the moment got a season long deal with them. Okay. So we're working with them for this season. We did work for them for 2 months of last season as well. But yeah, it's been a very good deal, actually.
And I was going to ask you about product placement and maybe bring Lizzie into that. Do you ever have any product placement on your show?
I'm speaking to somebody at the moment, actually, about some product placement. But we haven't actually done it before, but we have got a couple of people interested in that at the moment. So
all that nice sportswear you wear, that's purely out of your own choice.
It is, actually. It is. We sell some of our own products as well. We've got our own sort of Arsenal Fan TV brand. So a lot of times I wear a lot of our own brand. And then a lot of the other times I'm just wearing what I want to wear, at the moment. So,
what about Ty? He likes a bit of merch, doesn't he, Ty?
He likes a lot of merch. It has to be Arsenal, though. He loves his... he's the most passionate... Arsenal, an incredible Arsenal fan you'll ever meet in your life. But yeah, he on a match days, that's like his. It's almost like, people have superstitions and that. His one is he has to wear all the Arsenal. He walks around like the shop.
Quite lucrative for the shop.
He's the black Tony Pulis, I tell you. But, head to toe in all Arsenal merchandise. But, yeah, listen, he's a passionate fan, he is.
They're nobodies, but they've just beaten us. We're there, there's 3-0 down at half-time. How can you be positive now?
Positive that, listen, at the end of the day, we had a bad start. But Hector gets in a brilliant ball. Olivier equalises. It's a different game.
Lizzie, let's talk about... So it's tricky ground sometimes. You're getting lots of conversations with brands about influencers and fan TV. What are the pros and cons, do you think?
The influencer thing is a really interesting question. First of all, I'm not sure how I feel about the word influencer, but, you know, we're stuck with it, so we'll go with it for now. I think it's really tricky because what Robbie was saying about authenticity, we all know when it comes to, particularly in the world of influencers, authenticity is key because consumers are so savvy nowadays. And equally, you know, there's got to be some sort of value exchange. Whenever you enter into any kind of, oh God, I hate this, but conversation with a brand, you know, you want to feel like there's some sort of value and you're not just being sold at constantly. And I think some brands have really nailed it in terms of how they use influencers and others perhaps not so much. So, like, for example, I think personally Adidas, or Adidas, yeah, depending on your persuasion, is one brand who's really doing it well across all its categories. Football, I don't know if you know what they do with things like Tango League, so with young footballers, where they, in a nutshell, I'm probably doing it a disservice by just describing it in a sentence, but it's about getting mostly sort of teenage footballers to compete against each other in this sort of new form of football. And what they do is when you play it with your team, you get a score which is based not only about your performance and your skills on the pitch, but also your sort of social following and your influence, etc. But particularly in women's fitness. So this morning I actually went down to the Adidas studio. So they've set up this pop-up fitness studio on Brick Lane, which is really interesting because all the classes are completely free, but they're all, well, mostly run by influencers, what you might call fitness influencers. So people that have really considerably grown their fame and their sort of notoriety by being influencers. So, and I think that's fascinating because I don't think that would have happened 5 years ago. You know,
so they're not fitness instructors.
Well, no, they are. They are. They do have qualifications, but actually their main sort of they have high profile accounts, and whether they're Instagram or YouTube people, and it's, you know, it's all designed around comms and the fact that I go down there, the whole studio is built around, you know, Instagrammable moments. It's run by influencers. I mean, it's great though because the value exchange is really high because I'm getting a free, really good workout, which, you know, in London you'd pay £20 for a class, but equally Adidas is getting the PR, I suppose, off the back of it. So I think they do it particularly well, but it's got to be about that value exchange. It's got to be
believable, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's no point in just having someone with a considerable following saying, "Hey guys, check out this great new energy drink," yeah, and that's it. It's a flash in the pan.
It's the A word, isn't it? It's authenticity.
I know. Which is why I was really interested to hear whether you, when it got to that point, when you got to that tipping point of getting involved with brands, how you managed to keep it authentic, and how did you wrestle with that in your head about, you know, should we be doing brand deals or not?
I just come from it that it has to be believable, it has to be authentic, it has to be something that's gonna kind of match what we do. So, you know, as long as it does that, and I think as long as the brands are prepared to kind of work with us, which on this one Labrits have been very good, they've been prepared to work with us. We've had other brands in the past suggesting certain things, and I'm like, that's just not going to work. You know, it's just like,
such,
you
know, as?
I don't want to say.
Can
you
use code
are.
Names?
It's been, you know, because in the football circles, you get a lot of betting brands. Mm. So I remember we had one betting brand, for instance, and they were cold calling lots of people who signed up through coming to us. And I was really disappointed with that because I was like, you know, that's not what you said you were going to do in the first place. And, you know, but I think if brands are willing to work with us, sometimes we'll make suggestions to them and say, you know, we think, like what you were just suggesting there, you know, if you work with us and you come up with ideas that's going to kind of give back something to the fans, they will receive it better rather than you're just, you know, hitting them with stuff like that. They're just like, you could have it on there, they might just turn off. They're not interested in it. So make it engaging, make it fit the content that that we already have on the channel, and I think people will engage with it. Because you are right, with influencers, and I know a lot of the other, the big YouTube influencers, and, you know, people do they can literally say to someone, I drink this, and a lot of people would drink it because they have said so, but it has to be believable.
It must be tricky for you because this is now your, you say you've given up your previous career. This is now your business. This is now your life. So you've got to make it work commercially, right?
Yeah. And that's what I said. It is a balance, you know, because, you know, you don't want to, the people that follow you, you don't want them to become fed up with what you're, you know, doing because you're just slaughtering them with a load of ads. So that's why for me, it's more about quality of ads rather than quantity. It's all about, you know, things that are going to fit what we do. And if we can find that balance, we're more than happy to do it because obviously we do have bills to pay. We do have to, you know, we pay for all our own tickets, travel. I mean, I've got to get to Belgrade tomorrow. You know, we have to pay for these things, you know, and to bring that content to people, we do have to pay for this. So, and, you know, you get revenue for YouTube, but it's not lots and lots of what people think it is. So, but there is a balance.
What's gone wrong then with what why has the gap appeared that you're filling? What's gone wrong with mainstream media coverage of football?
Mainstream media coverage of football, I feel some of it is still great, you know, like you know, it's but then there's other parts of it that, you know, I think people have become a bit fed up of, and also I feel that it's just changed. You know, we're living in a time of social media where anybody can pick up their phone and, you know, anybody can have their say on things. So, for instance, I always look on it like this. You've got a game, right? So before the game, people like us, Arsenal Fan TV and other, you know, social media, we're having a massive conversation building up to the game, talking about it, who should be selected, who would you be in your 11. We're talking about it all along. Then the game comes along. Then that's when TV, they kick in because they got the rights to the game. So they show you the game and they do that brilliantly. But once that game's finished, we then, and throughout the game, we're talking about it on social media again. If you ever watch somebody nowadays, especially younger people, when they're watching a game of football, they're constantly on their phones, sending messages to their friends, looking at, you know, what other people are saying about the game as they're watching the game.
Makes you wonder how they can watch it properly.
Yeah, I know. But it's completely different. That is something that never used to happen. Mm. And then now, when the game finishes and the all of the you know, the rights have been shown by, you know, your Skies or your BT, that conversation now is continuing on again. So again, that's where we kick in and other social media platforms where everybody is talking about the game, and not just an hour after like they do on TV. For hours and hours and hours, we are talking about the game. We're discussing how Richarlison died for the penalty for Watford.
No, sorry. I don't know why I said yes. I think I'm still talking about it, but I'm not saying that.
But we'll still be talking about these things, like, you know, for days after. And that is where I feel there's been this big change. And that is where I feel like the established media have not got to grips with that. They don't know how to cover that part of it very well. They know how to cover the game brilliantly. They do that really, really well. But they don't know how to cover that conversation that happens afterwards. Sometimes it's almost like there's a fear of letting fans be open about certain things. It's like, oh, well, we can only get an ex-player to talk about that. Well, hold on. What about the fans? These guys invest their time, their money, their effort into getting to games and that, you know. And also with football, there's loads of issues around football and, you know, ticket prices. Ones that we've been talking about this morning is there's this proposed that they're going to play the Arsenal versus Liverpool game on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
You know, these are big, big conversations that are being had by fans, you know, and I don't think sometimes traditional media deal with that part of football very well. And that's kind of where we've been able to come in. And
it's good. It's a good thing because it's making football more democratic. Because if there's a fans revolt against the game on Christmas Eve, for example, then maybe the clubs have to listen to that, or maybe the media companies have to listen to
that. Yeah, and once upon a time, they probably wouldn't have had to have listened to it, or they would have had to have listened to it for about an hour, and then they could have just... But now, it's going to be continuing on. because people will be talking about it. It will continue on as long as they are talking about it. So, that's been the revolution in football, I feel. Mm.
So, Lizzie, is this the end of traditional media as a marketing channel?
I don't think so. I Richard's question was, what's gone wrong with traditional media in football? Well, I don't think it's gone wrong at all. I think there's a place for everything. I think social media has completely transformed my football and my match day and my fan experience, but in a good way. There's just more, as you say, there's more access. I've made friends, well, I say friends in inverted commas, but I've made friends with people on social media, Watford fans, I would never have met in real life.
Do they know that they're friends, inverted commas, or are they? Do they think they're friends? Or?
but people that I, you know, I talk to my boyfriend about, and we refer to them as their handles rather than their actual names because we don't actually know their real names, but we talk to them all the time, you know, just about, you know, the football stuff. But I just think it's completely transformed. You know, there used to be a very set ritual as you'd wake up, you'd stick on Soccer AM. Then you might go to the pub, you'd go to the game, go home, watch a match of the day, go to bed. And now, as you say, it's incessant, it's constant, which is a good and a bad thing because it's always there if you want it. It can be hard to escape sometimes. But I think it's just, I think it's only a good thing. And I think if clubs and brands can find a way to work with these vociferous fans in a positive way, then the potential is massive. So I still think there will always be a place for traditional, you know, football media.
I agree with that. I think I do.
Because on that point, I love hearing what, I don't know, Bob, who lives down the road in Watford, has to say about a game. But at the same time, I also want to know what Henry Winter thinks about it because he's been doing it for however long. Yeah. And there's that level of knowledge and experience. Mm. And so there's place for both of them. I want to hear what the fans think, but I do want to have that level of authority, which arguably comes from someone who's in a position of power at
the media. That's what I was saying to Gary Neville. I was saying, listen, Gary, okay, you can tell us about football because you, from a footballer's perspective, because you played the game. So there's certain things that you can tell us, right, that we've never experienced, we never ever will, right? But we can also tell you certain things about football that you've never experienced, standing there watching it, you know. You don't know about our journey home after. You know, when we've just lost the game. Do you know about that? You know, that journey back from Bayern Munich when you've been beaten, you know, by 5-1 the second time. You know, do you know about that? That's what we can tell you about those sort of things, how a fan feels in that situation. You could tell us how the players feel in the dressing room. So I think there's a place for, I agree with you 100%, for both types of media. I do get really puzzled sometimes why the clubs, for instance, in particular, don't work more with organisations like us and other people that are doing, you know, I think they're missing a massive opportunity. We're not against them, and we're always going to be independent and say our thing, but there's areas where we should be working together. I mean, there's a lot of good things, for instance, at Arsenal that they do. They could use our platform to highlight that. I don't think they do that enough. So,
The Line is sponsored by Cake, the Havas sport and entertainment agency.
What's the future for your show? What's the limit? You know, how big can it get?
Excuse me. I don't know. I think it can continue to get way bigger than what we are now. I think, you know, football is a worldwide game, you know. So with us, we just want to keep, you know, producing good content. We've got lots of ideas for other forms of content. We've got lots of ideas about involving people around the world because I've had so many fan groups get in contact with me from different parts of the world saying, hey, we're a big Arsenal group in Kenya. We'd like to do something similar and send you content. Groups in Australia, you know. So I think, you know, who knows where this journey is going to...
Global media empire.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. You never know. I mean, you know, it's can really become much bigger than what it is now, I feel.
Right, I've got, and so just along the same lines, so you've got people, you've got your, as I say, the regulars, your Claudes and your Troops and DTs, they're their own they've got their own channels.
Yeah.
Now, is that under the same umbrella? Are you doing it together, or are they doing that separately?
They've sort of done that separately. So they've gone away and they've set up their own channels separately. So whilst we do help them, because obviously we got a little expertise in it, but that is sort of, you know, they've done that. But we are working together on many other things now. I mean, one of the things we're working on at the moment is an app. That we're hoping that when this app comes out, you'll be able to find a lot of content on the UFF app, where we'll all be, you know, different teams of different clubs will be able to be found on there, and different influencers around football. So,
and who's, is that you controlling that? Or is that a congregation of other clubs?
That's a congregation of different clubs coming together under this one app. It's going to be called UFF. Which stands for United Football Fans, and you'll be able to get onto their app and you'll be able to see fans of various different clubs, so West Ham fans, Chelsea fans, as well as our content, and then like influencers like DT and people like with their vlogs and things like that. So that's going to be really interesting.
And have you
when
got
that comes
like a,
out.
Is that something you've got a cut in? Is that something you're helping build?
Yeah, that's something we're helping to build.
Okay.
Yeah, we're helping to build out. Yes, we have got something to do with that. And, you know, I think if that's something that can become really big as well, you know, if we can get people, because obviously, you know, you've got all these social media platforms. In an ideal world, you want your own. Not that we're going to leave any of the social media platforms. Sure. We're always going to be there. We're always going to have a presence there. But if you've got a central app where a football fan can come to and find all, as well as Arsenal, he can find other content from other clubs. Because the thing is, as football fans, we're interested in other clubs as well. Yeah. Even though we might not admit it, you know, I'm interested to see what a Tottenham fan, if he's got to say
careful,
about his
careful.
Club, or a Chelsea fan, or careful. A Man United fan, Liverpool. You know, you are, you know, because we're all in the Premier League. So, you know, it all has an effect. So,
well, some of those you've named are in the Champions League as well, Danny.
Yeah, don't mention that right now. Tottenham fans on their way to Madrid, with Arsenal fans going to Belgrade to play.
It's Thursday. Look, you have to look forward to Thursday, won't you, Rob?
You can tell he's a Tottenham fan, can't you?
Just going to rub it in occasionally.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in the way in which you choose the people that came on initially, because you've got, you know, you've got some big characters on there.
Yep.
Do you think that they were big characters anyway, and you got lucky, or are you encouraging them to be sort of almost caricatures of themselves?
Right, we've never chosen anybody to come on to Arsenal Fan TV. I didn't know any of these people, right? We're just there, and we're a platform for ordinary football fans. And you can just come on if you've got something to say. Guys like DT, Troops have come on. They've been very charismatic guys. People have wanted to see more of them. They've probably gone away, seen that, you know, a lot of people viewed their things, and they got a really great reaction. And then they've come back. And then over time, they've kind of turned into characters. But we are basically there, and we'll always be there for any fan. So, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. I got an email a couple of days ago about a fan that we interview who's a blind fan. He's been coming on recently. And the guy that interviewed me, he's a blind person as well. He said, Robbie, I like the fact that you've not mentioned at all that he's blind. You just interview him. And I said, well, he's an Arsenal fan. And that's all I'm concerned about. I don't care, you know, who you are. If you're an Arsenal fan and you want to have your say, you can come on and have your say on Arsenal Fan TV. And then, as you said, there's been certain people that they have kind of, you know, people really like to hear what they have to say. So they've become regulars, but it is there for everybody.
And in terms of the, obviously, I'm a Spurs fan, but I love it, but I really loved it when you were rowing about Arsene Wenger. And I'm just wondering if the model is based on division and unhappiness. There is real excitement and tension in there, and whether or not it would work, you know, Watford, there's a lot of unhappiness at Watford, obviously, on a daily basis.
Well, not
something like
minute.
Man City at the moment, for example. You know, they're steamrolling everyone. I'm just wondering if that moment of tension played really well for you and whether you can rely on that.
I mean, you know what? The thing is, right, well, so we get there's a question that get put to me all the time. And what I'd say, for instance, is we, over the last, say, six games, have still been getting the same amount of views and people watching our channels, but we haven't lost. We didn't lose up until Saturday. We've been winning. It was a streak of we have seven games, we won six of them. So it's not just, people are not just coming on because we lose. You may do, as a Tottenham fan, you may be right, oh, I don't want to see anything to do with Arsenal unless they lose, and I can understand that. But most fans are coming on because I think they look on it and they say, these are real football fans. And I appreciate real football fans and I'm going to go on and watch it. We do get accused sometimes. Some people do say, you know, some of our own fans sometimes have said to me, Robbie, so there was a guy on when we lost against Watford. He said to me, you're ganging up on me now, you know what I mean? And
once in a lifetime experience.
Well, no, if you remember the FA Cup semi-final 2 years ago.
Oh, here we go.
As well.
Here we go.
Sorry,
Carol, sound like Troy Deeney now. He's been texting me saying that. Now, and you know, he was saying to me, Robbie, you shouldn't do it today. I said, well, why not? Because we lost. So I said, well, why didn't you say that to me last week when we won, when we beat Brighton? I said, are you going to go home and you going to watch Talk Sport? Are you going to listen to Five Live with people moaning on there? Are you going to pick up a newspaper? He said, yeah. So I said, well, what's wrong with us letting real fans talk about it? He said, oh, yeah, I suppose you've got a point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, we're there, and I just looking at it, that we're a consistent platform. We can't turn off when we lose. We've got to be there, win, lose, draw. You know, nil nils, which is the worst results. Those are the only results, really, on Arsenal Fan TV when you do see a bit of a dip in numbers. And I think it's the same for TV, because if you notice, a nil nil draw, Man United versus Liverpool at the weekend, nil nil, last game on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
Went from being the game that we all were looking forward to watch and all the hype and that to being the last game on Match of the Day. So it's, you know, it's no different for us than any other platform. And, I'd like to see another invincible season for Arsenal, you know, and, you know, people would still be coming on and we'd be overjoyed then. And you'd still find a few fans moaning, because I remember when we had that invincible season at Highbury, there was this Scottish guy sitting in front of me. He used to moan every week about Thierry Henry. I often wonder if he's still around at the Emirates now. I tell you, I wouldn't want to be sitting anywhere near him, what he'd be saying now, you know.
Lizzie, I've got a suggestion for you. Troy Deeney TV. What do you think?
I mean, I'd tune in. Troy's brilliant on TV.
Talk about authentic.
Yeah.
I met him a couple of weeks ago. They had the launch of FIFA 18 and he was there. And I have to say, he was a really, really nice guy, really honest. Mm. And I was actually saying that to him. God, Troy, you should do a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I don't know why as well. That's another thing. I don't know why, like, some of the players, you know, they can be media guys themselves as well, you know, and that's another thing that maybe in the future we may be looking to try and, you know, sort of a consultancy or sort of advise some players on how they could do it. Because, you know, you've got lots of players at the moment and they're like, oh, when my career finishes, I'd like to break into media. I'm like, well, you could do it right now yourself.
And the savvy ones the savvy ones who know how to use Instagram or Facebook or whatever to their advantage. They do it really well, and it's great for fans because you get access to players which you would never have got 10 years ago, you know.
The savvy ones, but then you've got a lot of them that really, they've just got little companies running their accounts and they just tweet out the same old thing. And they could actually build their own media company. It's, you know, somebody, let's say a Mesut Ozil, could build his own. He's so popular on Twitter, not on the pitch at the moment, but on Twitter and Instagram, and he could build his own media company. But you'll still have players saying, oh, when I've finished, I want to be able to get onto Match of the Day. I'm like, well, you can already do it yourself with your own platform.
Yeah.
That's the change, what's happened now in social media.
How do you do it so quickly after the match finishes? You watch the match and then you're doing, you know, it's What's the just the logistics of it? How do you get out?
Well, don't Arsenal fans all leave at 80 minutes anyway?
That's true.
What's going on here?
I've seen that when I've been to the Emirates.
No. You. No, listen, I always, you know me, I always stay till the end as well. I never leave early. Even when he's getting beaten 6-0 by Chelsea, I'm still there till the end. But we just kind of do it on the spot. So, again, with modern technology, it enables you to, you know, do a lot of things that once upon a time you would have needed vans with satellite dishes on top and stuff like that. Because of modern technology, you can do things quicker. If, you know, you can find your ways around a lot of things. I'm not going to reveal all the little secrets of how we do it, because that's one of the things that kind of helps us a lot, the fact that we get our stuff out very quickly. But we basically, it boils down to the fact that we do it there and then. We don't move, we get it done there and then. And it because it is so important to have that content out as quickly as possible after the game, because as I said, as soon as the game's finished, everybody's talking about it, and you have to be in that conversation. There's no point in having a video that comes out 6 hours after everybody's already... we spoke about that 6 hours ago, mate. Well, don't want to hear about it now. You know, so it is all about, speed. And we're constantly working on ways to get it quicker and quicker and quicker.
What about... the image of the Emirates today is a fairly quiet place. It's, you know, there's that criticism, isn't there? It's all very corporate and it feels like the atmosphere is lacking, and that's quite often the case.
It's a fair criticism.
Is it? Well, it's a fair, it's just...
It's the Highbury Library.
It's the, yeah, exactly. But then, that's a Chelsea fan talking, by the way.
I know.
You ever been to Stamford Bridge? But the, there's a... But then you're the antithesis of that. So the fans can't wait to voice their opinions. So you've got two very different images of Arsenal fans, haven't you? You've got the ones that the sort of stereotype the Arsenal, you know, Emirates Library. But then what you're presenting, it's a completely different tone of voice, but it's also levels of engagement are completely different, it feels.
Yeah, I suppose that's why you don't believe in stereotypes, because, you know, the fans there, I think the fans there want to be more vocal. There's a lot of problems around atmosphere at Arsenal at the moment, which is a... something that we're looking to try and see what we can do about. That's a big issue at Arsenal at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, listen, the fans are the same as fans of most clubs. In the, you know, they want their club to succeed. They want their club to be the best. We can be very fickle. We know that, fans. But I think, basically, most fans in the Premier League are very, very similar. We started doing a thing recently where we try to, as well as interviewing Arsenal fans, we try to interview a few of the away fans as well. And that's always really interesting, because you'll interview an Arsenal fan and they'll be like, oh, Theo Walcott, he's useless. You know, we should sell him, get rid of him. This guy's a waste of space. And then you'll interview an away fan and he's like, wow, Walcott. When he got the ball, every time he got the ball, I was frightened. He was so quick. He, you know, we couldn't deal with him. But it's really interesting sometimes when you get, like, two sets of fans talking about the same situation, you know. So, I don't know. We're football fans. That's what we're like.
I think that is a good place to finish it. Robbie, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Lizzie, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Cheers, Danny. Thanks to Deo Adene for the editing and Adam Vesey for production here at Cake in the HKX building at St Pancras. Until next time, goodbye.
The Line, where sport meets the marketing business.